ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The best solution is for a child or an adult to have a roof over their head and not be staying in a police station.
With youth refuge beds hundreds of kilometres away, police in Mildura often call on sports coaches and other community members to give kids in crisis a safe place to sleep. The only other option is the police station foyer. That story soon. And this may not come as a shock to many, but according to insurer NRMA, Australian drivers have been paying record high prices for fuel this year. We'll look at the toll that it's taking on many motorists already struggling with the cost of living.
It's pretty crazy. I only got my licence maybe like 4 weeks ago, and I still haven't filled up this car fully yet because I can't afford it. It's crazy on apprenticeship wages.
I'm a single mum, so it is hard for me to afford fuel and all that, so I just get public transport everywhere. I just find it easier for myself.
Exorbitant. I've noticed it in the last few weeks. I use 95 and 98. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm feeling a pinch.
I'm Alex Hyman, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. In the regional city of Mildura in Victoria's northwest, vulnerable people, including children, are being left at the town's police station in the middle of the night when they don't have alternative safe accommodation. With no refuge beds in town and the closest facility hundreds of kilometres away, police will call on sports coaches or other community members to help out. But as a last resort, they may end up sleeping in the police station foyer. Homeless support services say youth refuge beds are desperately needed across regional Victoria. Tamara Clark has this story from Mildura.
It was a late winter night last year when Luke Burnham in Mildura received a desperate call from police. One of his former jiu-jitsu students needed emergency accommodation because of a domestic dispute. The young teenager faced spending the night at the local police station if he was unable to help.
I've had a police officer ring me and drop one of our ex-students off to a house for emergency accommodation. That was before we had the kids. And that was just because they knew me and they knew that I wasn't that person. So that kid would be safe.
Vulnerable people, including children needing crisis accommodation, are being left at the Mildura police station in the middle of the night when they don't have any place else to go. Superintendent John O'Connor says these people end up spending the night in the foyer.
If someone's in a really vulnerable situation, then we step in. Look, I'm not advertising for people to come to the police station, but people who are desperate know the system and occasionally they would come to our front doors and we don't say no.
When someone presents to the local police station seeking homelessness support, officers contact community and government agencies or child protection services if the homeless person is a child. Friends, family and community members who are considered reliable are also called upon for support.
We'd speak to them, we'd try and see if they've got friends, relatives, a cricket coach, football coach, netball coach who might be able to take them in, who they deal with. And if that's not possible, then as a last point, we would have them here.
According to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, more than 30,000 Victorians and almost 12,000 under the age of 24 were homeless at the 2021 census. The number of homeless people in Mildura almost doubled from 264 in 2016 to 518 in 2021, with 192 people under the age of 24, up from 104.
Well, the best solution is for a child or an adult to have a roof over their head and not be staying in a police station.
There are no 24/7 homeless support services in Mildura.
We'll try and get them out to other places, but if there's nothing available at 3 a.m. in the morning, well, then they'll stay here, we'll feed them, make sure they've got plenty of fluid.
According to the Council of Homeless Persons, approximately 16,000 young people aged between 15 and 24 in Victoria required homelessness support last year. Even when a young person is able to get in contact with the agencies, there's no guarantee of finding a safe place to stay. Youth refuge beds are considered age-appropriate dwellings for people seeking immediate short-term support, but there are none in the northwest Victorian city.
There was no other place for her to go.
That's Mildura-based jiu-jitsu coach Luke Burnham, who was called on to provide emergency accommodation for one of his former students. Ending that story from Tamara Clark. And the Department of Families, Fairness and Housing has been contacted by the ABC for comment.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company here on Australia Wide. How much does it cost to fill up your car with petrol? If it feels like you're paying more than ever for fuel lately, you might be right. According to the NRMA, Australian drivers have been paying record high prices for fuel this year, and it's starting to take a toll on many motorists already struggling with the cost of living crisis. So will prices ever go down, or will the government step in to help? Our reporter Keely Johnson has this story.
It's pretty crazy. I only got my licence maybe like 4 weeks ago and I still haven't filled up this car fully yet because I can't afford it. It's crazy on apprenticeship wages, but whenever I need to fill it up, I just like put in like 15, 10 bucks or something. But other than that, it's ridiculous stuff, I tell you.
They are so high. I'm a single mum, so it is hard for me to afford fuel and all that, so I just get public transport everywhere. I just find it easier for myself.
How much does it cost to fill up your tank?
My car's about 170 bucks. Mrs. car's about 90. So, yeah, it's quite expensive.
We use a lot because we've been on the road as grey nomads for 15 years now, so we travel every day we move, even if it's only 30 kilometres or 100 kilometres. So we go through a lot of fuel. It is very expensive.
Exorbitant. I've noticed it in the last few weeks. I use 95 and 98. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm feeling the pinch.
I know that I'm pretty careful about my fuel and my fuel use and only fill up when I need to and try to push it as long as I can. But yeah, I think they're quite high at the moment and I can understand why people are struggling with them.
Are you noticing fuel is impacting the budget?
Totally. It is a big part of it, but so is groceries. I've noticed it with groceries as well. And it just means I have to be a bit careful with other things. For example, less treats and less outings and things like that, and just kind of be a little bit more conscious about my spending.
According to motoring company, the NRMA, fluctuations aside, fuel prices in Australia have been breaking records consistently since 2022. And clearly, it's starting to take a toll on many people already struggling in the cost of living crisis. Here's NRMA spokesperson Peter Currey.
Australia's due relief at the bowser. It started with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Since then, I think we've breached the highest price three or four times.
Just last month, Sydney recorded its highest ever daily average for regular unleaded petrol, with an average of $2.23 a litre. It's an alarming figure and not isolated. Average petrol prices in Brisbane, Melbourne and Adelaide all peaked over $2.25 in April. And Peter says it adds up.
The average family spends over $100 a week on fuel. They spend $5,500 a year. On fuel, that's obviously metropolitan areas and regional areas. When you move out of the cities and into regional areas, those numbers explode because people have to drive longer distances. There's less access to public transport.
So why is petrol so expensive? It's due to a sustained high international oil price and a low Australian dollar. Things like the conflict in the Middle East and the Russian-Ukraine war are contributing to high oil prices. Now, Australia imports most of its fuel and has no power over its wholesale price. But companies do have control over how much they sell it for at the bowser. And Peter says that's why we can see wildly different prices for fuel across the board.
In Sydney, you can see price differences of 40, 50, and even recently 60 cents a litre, not just in the same suburb, but sometimes on the same street. And that is unique to Australia. Now, what that is a reflection of the competing strategies that we have in the retail market. You've got the larger brands, you know, the fancy looking servos. They tend to trade not on low costs, but on building a loyal customer base. So their margins are always going to be higher. Then you get the smaller players in the market, the independents or the independently owned branded service stations, and they compete on cost. They will keep their profit margins lower to encourage people to fill up there. It's effectively two competing strategies. It's not illegal. Prices in Australia aren't regulated. They can charge whatever they want. And that's exactly how it plays out.
There are a few tips to help save money on fuel. Things like filling up when and where you see cheaper petrol, as well as seeking out a range of fuel discounts offered through supermarkets and other retailers can help. But Peter says a game changer for many consumers has been using the government's Fuel Check app or website. In New South Wales, it's a requirement for petrol stations to upload their prices in real time.
And what that's done is it's basically meant that if you're going to go and fill up, you can find the cheapest servo in your local area and that you're not just guessing.
Now, the other thing that impacts the price of fuel in Australia that the government does have control over is tax. The tax charged on each litre of petrol, known as the fuel excise, is currently 49.6 cents a litre, and that's set to increase again in August in line with inflation. Now, back in 2022, the Coalition halved the fuel excise for 6 months with the aim of lowering fuel costs and easing cost of living strains. And now there's growing pressure on the Albanese government to do the same. I reached out to Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers, who has remained tight-lipped about whether or not a cut to the excise will be included in the May 14 budget. But according to economist and commentator Chris Richardson, it's unlikely.
Chances are they won't, because it's not really a good idea. People love it when the government gives them money during a cost of living crisis, but it can easily make inflation worse rather than better. The International Monetary Fund back in January said that if the government wanted to help fight the cost of living crisis, it should fight inflation. It went on to say that the best way to do that was some combination of cutting spending and raising taxes. Now, economists would mostly agree with that. It's also political suicide, basically.
And Peter says without intervention, it's unlikely fuel prices will drop anytime soon.
The volatility of what's happening globally, particularly in the Middle East, is keeping people on edge, particularly the markets. Is there relief in sight? The short answer is no, unfortunately.
That's NRMA spokesman Peter Khoury, ending that report by Keely Johnson.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Let's head to Queensland now. From gold to sheep and these days beef cattle, Rockhampton has had a varied history. But it's an event held every 3 years that has secured Rockhampton its spot as the beef capital of Australia. And it's being held right now. It's part conference or expo and part festival and agricultural show. And it sees tens of thousands of people travel to central Queensland for a gathering that's all about beef and all the different people involved in producing it. From graziers to abattoirs to butchers, chefs, even climate scientists and animal welfare experts. The event is Beef 24. Beef Australia, or Beef Week as it's commonly called. And our reporter Angel Parsons was there.
At the T7 Kickyard Pavilion, so that's where you can find data bars in this week in Rockhampton.
So I'm at Beef 24 at the Rockhampton Showgrounds. In front of me, cattle are paraded around the ring for judging, kind of like you might have seen at your town's ag show. But this is so much more than that. There are hundreds of vendors here, several bars and stages, a dining precinct called Meat Street, panels and talks happening all day, all week. And 115,000 people are expected to come from all over Australia and even overseas.
For anyone who hasn't been before or hasn't been involved in the industry, it's a great opportunity to see what we do and who we are as Aggies.
A social gathering kind of thing, you know, you get out like every 3 years. There's a lot of new technology and a lot of things to see.
We have ramen and we live on a farm. And we have lots of animals.
The event is held every 3 years. And to give you a sense for just how massive this is, Beef Australia says that in 2021, it was the biggest event to be held in regional Australia ever, both geographically and financially. So this week is something that a lot of people have been counting down for.
Pretty well since I started Cattle Club in Year 7. Had a bit of a break because I blew my knee out on a motorbike. And I come back this year. Ready to go.
Now, whether beef is your cup of tea or not, there's no denying the passion and knowledge the people around me have and just how central the industry is to the local community.
I've been here showing cattle. It's made my family real proud, considering Pop passed away the other year. And, yeah, just been here for him and everything.
It's felt a bit like stepping into another world here, and a big reason for that, I think, is the fashion. So while you might have been poring over the Met Gala looks this week, I've been analysing the beef getup.
I'm wearing pink boots and a rainbow belt.
Also that bit of smell of cow manure underneath your fingernails.
Oh, you got to have your big hat on, your boots and your jeans. Chuck a tie on show morning.
There's conferences and panels where industry leaders and experts are chatting about the biggest issues of the industry too, like biosecurity, trade, deforestation and carbon and methane emissions. And even if you're not in it for the beef, it's a huge social event that really transforms a town.
100%. Like, I went to Woolworths yesterday afternoon and there was just people everywhere. And
I think even in the lead up to Beef Week, for the last 2 months, all of our friends have been talking about what events they're going to at Beef Week. It's such a social thing for us and something to really look forward to.
Reporter Angel Parsons there with some of those attending Beef 24 in Rockhampton. An estimated 400,000 Brumbies live in the wild across the country, but left unmanaged, populations can rapidly increase. That poses a threat to the environment, humans, and also puts the Brumbies themselves at risk. In a pine plantation on the outskirts of Gympie in southern Queensland, the Brumbies are being trapped for a rehoming program. Landline's Meg Bolton spoke with Dr. Dave Berman about the program.
We catch them and find homes for them to reduce the risk of that of collisions between horses and people. Usually it's the horses get killed, but eventually, you know, there will be people killed. Originally in about 2009, there were 4 horses killed per year, 4 collisions at least. That's what we know about. We removed all the horses that were regularly crossing the road, and then for 4 years there were no collisions. So we showed that that worked.
But when relocating stopped briefly, the population grew, causing a spike in accidents. Now the focus is to consistently remove about 100 horses each year.
Yeah, I don't mind her. I think she'll be good down the track.
Anna Urig runs training camps to rehome the Brumbies. Today she's selecting which horses will be the right fit.
I like to have some nice mature horses that are fully filled out that people can have a ride, and then some of the younger ones as well for people that are looking to, you know, have a horse from a young age.
From tracking to transporting, the process is slow and requires patience and a respect for the animals.
They're wonderful animals, and that fellow with the curly mane that I loaded, he's pretty special. He's so frightened, but he trusts me already. It's very special.
Dr. Berman has been managing Brumby populations for 40 years across Australia. In large numbers, the descendants of escaped domestic horses damage the environment and impact native animals. He says rehoming is becoming more common, but it's not the only solution.
In a lot of other parts of Australia where populations are getting too much, horses can be shot from the air or the ground.
Once these horses leave the forest, they're transported about half an hour away to where the camp will begin. The challenge for camp attendees is domesticating the wild Brumbies that 3 weeks ago wouldn't let a person get within 100 metres.
Hopefully by the end of our time here before the camp starts, they've gotten used to the yards and settled down a bit. So, yeah, I think we've picked some nice ones.
Participants travel from as far as Tasmania to attend and pick their Brumby before camp begins.
I liked his age, and I liked the way that he moved, and just he seemed sensible.
I've kind of picked him because when Anna ran him through the round pen, he was the chill one. So I'm like, yeah, he's perfect.
Theoretical work is a core part of the camp. The day starts with participants reflecting on what they've learnt and what they're hoping to achieve with their horse.
I'm starting to be more relaxed and natural with him. The more he relaxes, the more I relax.
Forming a close bond of trust and affection between the Brumby and handler is key for the learning process for both human and horse.
I just love seeing the transformation, and I love giving people the opportunity to learn those skills. So, you know, like I could break in a Brumby continuously and I still wouldn't be able to rehome as many as we can through the camps. And it means getting Brumbies, you know, from the bush that don't have a certain future, giving them a chance at domestic life, which is pretty cushy. Feed, water, wormer, you know, all that.
But for Brumby owners 14-year-old Ruby and her 17-year-old cousin Brooke, the initial risk of an untrained horse is well worth the reward. Ruby's horse Gidget came from Anna Urig when Ruby was just 5 years old. Gidget was already broken in, but over the years their strong bond has helped them achieve new heights.
It worked. If you don't have a strong connection, it's hard to do anything. Like,
well, it comes with trust. Yeah, and trust and stuff. If your horse doesn't trust you, like, if Gidget didn't trust me, she wouldn't jump that jump for me today.
After being old enough to attend the Brumby Project Camp, Ruby now has a herd of four and is patiently training Brumbies after they're trapped in the wild.
Good boy. Annie's one that I've really had a few wow moments with, because when I got her, Anna's like, oh, she's really, really nervous. Like, you're just going to have to work it off. And now she's amazing. Like, I take her out on trials. She doesn't care. I can stand on her now.
It's definitely a process and a journey, and it's not just, you know, the physical steps. It takes, like, you know, a lot of emotional, mental and physical resilience.
Melissa Tunis's resilient Brumby Valor will join her herd of domestic horses that she uses for equine therapy.
Amazing to think that, you know, when we got here last Friday, he'd never been touched. It just, like, shows you how resilient they are and just how willing, it'll make me cry, how willing they are to try for us and give us all that they have, even though they might be, you know, scared or have things that they have to get through and past. But, yeah, they try their hardest.
That's camp attendee Melissa Tunis finishing that report by Landline's Meg Bolton. And you can watch that full Landline story this Sunday on ABC TV at 12:30 or anytime on ABC iView. And staying with horses for our final story tonight, Northern New South Wales is now home to two of the nation's best horsewomen. Dungowan's Lindy McNaughton has been crowned Australia's greatest horsewoman, while Inverell's Beth Camilleri was awarded Cowgirl of the Year. Both riders competed in the national event in Victoria. Lara Webster asked Lindy what it felt like to win the big title.
All right, we are ready to get underway. The arena is set. Our judge is in position.
Don't really probably have the right words. Happy and very emotional because the little horse that I won it on is very special to me. He's a beautiful black stallion called Woolerine Black Ice. We nicknamed him Smoothie. He's his stable name. But he belongs to some good friends of mine, Michael Rapley and Chris and Miranda Donahue, and they've given me the chance to show him for the last 12 months. So to be able to win that for them, that there was just really, really special.
Well, it sounds like to me, Lindy, you might be better talking about the horses than yourself. So tell me a bit more about Smoothie.
He's by Smooth as a Cat out of a Tell Us Again mare. I've had him for a little over 12 months. We originally took him to Dorby. There's an event there that's called the Australia's Greatest Horseman. So that attracts both men and women from all over the country. And we've took him 2 years in a row to that, and he's finaled both years up there, which that kind of led us to where we thought, you know what, this horse deserves to head on down to Tatura to Australia's Greatest Horsewoman and have a chop at that, because that event in Tatura is, it's about the versatility of a horse, and Smoothie is every bit of that.
Well, what did you and Smoothie need to do to claim this title?
You've got three phases and then a final. The first phase is a reining pattern where you've got to execute sort of circles and stops and lead changes and spins. The next phase, the next day, which is the cutting. And then the last phase on the third day was what they call an obstacle, which is run by the National Cowboys Challenge Association, where you've got more or less 10 to 12 obstacles that you've kind of got to navigate over, that you don't actually get told what they are until the night before. And then you've kind of got to learn which way to go just prior to the event, and then you've got to go and see whether you can go over bridges and through curtains on your horse and or rope something. It's things that you may never really done on your horse. Well, I know I hadn't, but that was a really fun event. Once you've sort of completed those three phases, then they take the top 10, and then you've got to go and do what we call a cow horse event in the final, which, yeah, that's the one we ended up winning.
What's it mean all in all?
It means everything to me. And I also wanted to mention that I got to go down there without my daughter, and she competed in the junior section, and to be able to go down and ride alongside her, which she ended up third in the junior section, it would just, it means a lot. It opens a lot of doors, and I hope it shows, what I really want to probably say is that I hope it opens doors for young people coming through, that what you can go and achieve if you set dreams and goals and go for it.
That was Lindy McNaughton, who has claimed the title of Australia's greatest horsewoman. And that story was from Lara Webster. And that is Australia Wide for this Thursday evening. I'm Alex Harmon. I'll be back again with you tomorrow night. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC and Australia Wide and you'll get there. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.